Welcome to the REI Mastermind Network, where host Jack Haas gathers amazing stories from leaders in real estate investing. In each episode, our guests will tell you what they're doing that works, what they've tried that failed, and best of all, you'll learn actionable steps to take your real estate investing to the next level. Now, here's Jack with another value-packed episode.
We have Patrick Elsner with me here today, and you can learn about what he is up to by going to braninside.com/mastermind. That's going to be a clickable link in the show notes as we talk about franchise ownership and buying. In fact, we just talked before I hit record that this is kind of a good timing because I just finished reading E-Myth Revisited again. And it kind of talks a lot about franchise ownership and the benefits of. So really appreciate your time here, Patrick.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start things off. A lot of stuff when it comes to real estate investing, brokerages, any of this type of stuff has typically been accidental employment. Like, how did you find your way to this?
So I sold advertising for the NBC affiliate here in St. Louis and for the St. Louis Cardinals radio network. And I sold advertising primarily to franchise owners. And I got to know the franchise industry very well through these franchise owners. And what I came to realize pretty quickly is I'm like, they're no different than anybody else. They just chose to do business ownership vis-a-vis franchising versus like a W-2 job. So that's how I got immersed into franchising some 20 plus years ago.
Is it fair to say that you are a franchise broker here now today then?
Yeah, so it you know, the nomenclature, it depends upon who the individual is, but I consider myself a consultant. A broker selling something, I can't sell someone a franchise. My role is to be a conduit or a matchmaker. Whether you join the franchise, that's ultimately between the franchisor and yourself.
I think a lot of people look at business ownership like a franchise, thanks to Rich Dad, Poor Dad and the E-Myth type books. Could you talk a little bit about maybe some of that, the benefit of owning a franchise versus starting a company from scratch?
Yeah, you know, and there's no perfect answer. I mean, you don't need McDonald's to open up a burger joint. The question is, are you better off partnering with a franchise brand because they're bringing the playbook, the infrastructure, the tools, the supply chains, the marketing, the know-how? And yeah, you're paying for that. Obviously, you're giving up a percentage of your monthly gross. But the question is, again, are you better off? Now, there are certain people, certain personalities that aren't suited for franchising, especially if you're like a pure entrepreneur. That's not a franchise model that they should embark on. But if you're interested in taking somebody else's playbook and running with it, franchising is worth a look.
Sure. Can you talk a little bit about what industries you're currently seeing trending-wise in the world of franchising and maybe why?
Yeah. A lot of it right now is in the health and wellness space or anything more broadly targeting seniors, baby boomers, and the aging population. We know that spending block is a huge opportunity for anybody targeting seniors, baby boomers. They've got the money. The kids are now out of the house. They're sort of in their later years. So they've got money to spend and they're always looking for the fountain of youth. So anything in the health and wellness space is great. Anything provided services more broadly, again, a great opportunity.
Outside of all of the franchises that you review and then consult on, are you finding any trends or anything in particular that makes key qualities that makes that franchise particularly successful?
I think the biggest thing is people figuring out what they need to do that plays to their strength. The last thing you want to do is get into a franchise that doesn't play to your strength, because that's when oftentimes people will struggle. The other thing is, candidly, franchising and just business ownership isn't for everybody. I mean, Kiyosaki talks about in the book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, 99% of the people are working for the 1%, whether it's, you know, Motorola or an independent business owner or a franchise owner. So it's not always the best fit for everybody.
That's an interesting concept, and it was the first time I've made that connection. You know, we hear in our society and the media all the time that the wealthiest 1% makes all the money, but you just put it into perspective. Most people work for that 1%.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, again, going back to Kiyosaki's book, The Cash Flow Quadrant, you know, you're either an employee, a business owner, an investor, or you're self-employed like a dentist or a lawyer. That's the nature, one of those four. And 99% of the people end up as employees in large part, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but Kiyosaki talks about in his book, The Conspiracy of the Rich. He said the education system in this country is designed to crank out employees. The problem is you're like 40 and you wake up and you go, hey, wait a minute. Why am I working for Motorola or Big Blue? Why can't I be a business owner? Well, now you got a big mortgage, kids in private school, and the man's got you where he wants you. And that's all by design.
Can you talk a little bit about how you mentioned you're a consultant, how you help an individual? Let's start off with the onboarding process, how you get to know the individual, and how you match that person to the franchises you consult with.
So I always start with criteria. I have them fill out a questionnaire. I interview them. After the interview, I do my research, and then I come back and make recommendations. I was just working with a gentleman this morning in Dallas, and he's like, Patrick, I'm overwhelmed. There's thousands of franchises. And naturally, when you talk to any franchise salesperson, you know what they're going to tell you about their brand, right? Oh my gosh, it's rainbows and unicorns. And that's what they're supposed to do. But I always tell people it's like real estate. If I'm going to move to Dallas, I'm not going to drive around aimlessly going to random open houses. I'm going to sit down with a realtor, and the realtor is going to interview me and ask about bedrooms, bathrooms, price point, architecture, home, all those things. Once that's established, then we do the search. It's the same approach we take with franchising.
Mm-hmm. Could you share some of the questions? Like, what are some of the most insightful questions you ask?
Yeah, the biggest thing that I talk about, so many people will come to me and they'll say, Patrick, I want to open up a Dunkin' Donuts. And I say, oh, really? Okay, well, why is that? And they'll say, oh, well, you know, I love Dunkin' Donuts. And every morning I go there and get coffee and, man, the place is packed. There's a line out the door. So that's very, you know, surface level thinking. And I get it. But the question is, I always ask them that, like, well, can you make any money owning a Dunkin' Donuts? So like, I don't know what kind of money they make. I said, well, do you know what it takes to be an owner? I mean, do you, you know, imagine mainly unskilled, probably teenagers? Well, I don't know. Because, you know, they work at Motorola and they're managing white collar, you know, engineer educated types. So many people approach it from the wrong end. They approach it as a consumer and not from a business owner mindset.
It's interesting you bring up Dunkin' Donuts. In our area, we had a Krispy Kreme that opened, and the line was ridiculous. There was always somebody there for a year straight. It was crazy how busy they were. But in the end, they still went on one of those.
Well, and you know what? There's an expression, success has many fathers, failure is an orphan, right? Now, I can't say specifically, why did that Krispy Kreme go out of business? You're like, well, there was a line. What happened? Maybe they ran out of money. Maybe they're terrible operators. There was a McDonald's about 2 miles from my home that closed. I'm like, how does a McDonald's go out of business? Well, could be that maybe that operator just didn't know what they were doing. So many different factors come into the play on the success and failure of a business.
What type of market research should an individual do before they even approach you? Like, or is that primarily your core business?
Yeah, the market research is largely done by the franchisor. I always tell people, back it up a bit. So many people will come in and they'll say, Patrick, I got a perfect place for a car wash, or I got a perfect place for Smoothie King. And I'm like, well, it doesn't really work that way because you see, somebody may already own that territory, or somebody may have, Smoothie King has already scouted out that area and they said, no, that's a bad location. So before you get to that point, I always tell people, figure out your criteria and then look for the franchise.
With all of that, I'm sure there's got to be some sort of financial obligation that they have to be aware of and be ready for. What type of things should they be concerned about ahead of time?
You know, at the end of the day, I always tell people it's going to come down to three questions. What's the investment? What's the return? And what do I have to put up with every day? Doesn't matter what the franchise is. So always start with, you know, how much are you comfortable investing? What are your expectations on return? I mean, if you don't cash flow positive for 24 months, is this going to be putting a hardship on your family? So a lot of those factors, again, are just like going back to that real estate. We're not going to look at million-dollar homes if our budget's 250.
Mm-hmm. It seemed like, you know, going back to the E-Myth, a lot of franchises rely on their processes and procedures that have already been documented that you can kind of follow the owner's manual, if you will. How deep do you get into that regarding the quality of training and material?
As a consultant, very little, because my role is to give people franchise recommendations solely based upon their criteria. Now, as they investigate the franchise, let's say go back to your Krispy Kreme example. Before you join that franchise, the beauty of this whole entire process is you talk to those Krispy Kreme owners. And, you know, maybe you talk to that owner and say, gosh, you know, what happened? Why did you fail? Well, it was this or was that. I blame the franchise or I blame myself, whatever it is. But, you know, you ask about what is the training program like? What kind of support do they offer? Who's going to help me with SEO, search engine optimization? Who's going to help me acquire customers? All of those things are laid out and you can find out through the investigation. The Federal Trade Commission has such a tight clamp on franchising that there are no secrets. Everything is out there if you're willing to do the investigation.
Okay. Well, what type of common mistakes have you seen then as people are getting into franchise that they should try, we should be aware of and avoid?
The biggest thing I see is they get into the wrong franchise. I mean, so many people will come to me and they'll say, you know, I want to open up a Baskin Robbins. And I go, oh, okay, well, why is that? Oh, Patrick, everybody loves ice cream. I mean, you know, you own an Amco transmission. People come in mad, they leave mad. But, you know, if I sell them a $5 cup of ice cream, everybody's going to be happy. So then they get in there and they start, you know, opening these Baskin Robbins and they quickly realize, man, I don't like these long hours. And then I don't like the bell curve, you know, making most of my money during the summer months. And then, you know, average sale is $5. It's a lot of $5 to get to $300,000 in revenue. And then you're like, $300,000 in revenue, I'm only making 30 grand and I'm working 70 hours a week with teenage employees. And they go, why did I do this? Bad idea.
Well, to build on that, I'd be curious as to the importance of somebody having any kind of background in the franchise that they're considering going into. You've given a couple examples now where it sounds like the person would have no experience in those industries, let alone restaurant experience. How important is it to have somebody know what they're doing, at least in a little bit, before they go into a true center of real giant?
Yeah, it's not so much the subject matter. It's more about the skill sets. Like, I'd give you an example. I placed a guy in Houston, Texas, Bob Hillier. Now, Bob was with Bank of America and, you know, white collar, Brooks Brothers wearing suit guy. He never was involved in the construction business. And I put him into a franchise that's identical to one we all know called ServPro. Bob's franchise is called Pure Oclean. Now, he went from flying on a plane every week, going to New York to BOA's headquarters, to now he's sucking water out of somebody's basement in Houston. But last year, he did $25 million in revenue. It's more not so much about the construction and the restoration is as what Bob's skill sets are as a business owner.
Just to remind everybody, I want to point you to franinside.com/mastermind to learn more about what Patrick and his team are up to. And do us a great favor, if you found this conversation interesting, share it with one of your investor friends. So you talked about the regulations around franchises as it is. What type of help or guidance do you typically provide your clients regarding navigating that?
Yeah. So a couple of things. I have a 22-page guide that I wrote on how to conduct a franchise investigation. I also have people on my team that help with funding, financing, navigating SBA loans. I have an attorney that specializes in franchising. So I've got all these people that are backing me up. And these are resources that I've developed over the 20. And the people that I have on my team that help people navigate through the whole process.
It's definitely who, not how in this situation, isn't it?
Absolutely, 100%.
So can you already shared one success story with the banker that became a water-sucking individual. I don't know what type of company is that. But could you share some additional stories of individuals that's moved to franchise successes?
Yeah. There was a guy up in Green Bay that I put into a locksmith franchise. And he had it for several years. And it was interesting about him. He kept his quote unquote 9-to-5 W-2 job. He actually sold chemicals for like manufacturing plants. And he kept this job, but he continued to operate his locksmith franchise. And then out of the blue, a competitor came in and offered him, sight unseen, a nice paycheck to basically sell the business to him. And so he ended up getting out of that. There's another individual that I placed into a franchise that provides in-home care to seniors, Scott Greenberg down in West Palm Beach. And it's the same thing. I mean, Scott came from the printing industry. And now I think last year he did close to $9 million in revenue with his senior care company. Now he's got his family involved and he's a pretty big deal down in Palm Beach County.
You've had a lot of 20 plus years of experience in this industry. You've probably seen franchisers as franchisees, as well as individual business owners trying to start their own thing. Most of us try to become entrepreneurs or try to get into this business to regain time. How have you seen individuals slowly stepping out of the franchise world and become actual business owners instead of being in the business on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about a guy named Phil Dean here in St. Louis, and Phil's kind of a mentor to me. He owns a franchise called Stanley Steamer Carpet Cleaner. Now, I don't have to tell you, the guy is a multimillionaire many times over. He owns huge territory. He's one of the most successful Stanley Steamer franchise owners, but he's not, you know, cleaning carpets. He's built this powerful infrastructure with a couple hundred vehicles going out every day across businesses and homeowners and providing those services. That's where you want to get to. You can't work in the business day to day. Otherwise, you're merely buying a job. Ray Kroc said it best, franchising is about working on the business and not in it.
I'd be curious, because you've been in this now for so long, how has the franchising evolved, especially with the internet and now ChatGPT and everything going on right now? I would imagine you might be starting to see some individuals coming, thinking that they can just flip a switch and some internet business comes alive.
Yeah, there's no substitute for hard work and all the tools. You still have to be involved. This whole idea, and I probably say once or twice a month, somebody will say to me, well, Patrick, you know, I want an e-commerce business. I see all these YouTube ads about, you know, set it and forget it and Amazon fulfillment, and none of them are franchises, and I can't figure out if any of them are scams or, you know, there's a couple of guys that are doing okay and everybody else is sucking wind. But there's still no substitute for the basics. Selling donuts, carpet cleaning, all those things. Those are still the basis for our U.S. economy.
I'd be curious regarding that ongoing relationship with a franchisee and a franchisor. Like, what type of communication should somebody expect, and what's that ongoing communication?
Yeah. So most of the best franchisors communicate regularly through whether it's, internal communications and group messaging. And so the best franchisors have a really strong relationship with their franchise owners. There's associations and things of that nature. So it's really just more about being part of a network. A couple of the franchises just this past week, they actually had their annual meetings. And so they bring together all of their franchise owners and, you know, discuss best practices and new initiatives and things of that nature.
I would imagine that a lot of people are kind of looking at exit strategies or something in the end. What type of help do you provide there to just make those necessary plans?
So I just helped an individual who was a client of mine purchase an existing franchise in Raleigh, North Carolina. So I can work in a way that helps facilitate the exit of a franchise. I can help an individual pick up and purchase an existing franchise. A lot of it just is really incumbent upon the individual and their criteria. But, you know, having them fill out the questionnaire, do that interview is where I have the information to go off and do the search.
Earlier, you mentioned some trends and a few other things that seems to be kind of hot right now. Are there any particular businesses that you can share that seem to be excelling in those niches?
Yeah, one of the most interesting ones we had recently was a franchise in the men's health space. So it is a franchise that provides things like testosterone relief or erectile dysfunction help. All of these things are kind of, I know, subject matters of, you know, late night comedians, but if you're a male over the age of 40 and you're suffering from low T, this is some serious stuff. So this franchise actually provides all these alternatives, but they do it in a non-doctor setting. So again, there's so many franchises that are out there and all these weird little niches, but that's what makes this country great. There's a lot of ways to make money in this country.
You know, you see a lot of small companies too, that they have hopes to become a franchise. Have you run into individuals like that come to you maybe and want to turn their business into a franchise?
Yeah, we just helped a gentleman in Los Angeles. He has a flooring company and he wanted to turn it into a franchise. So again, I have partners that I work with that take independent businesses and convert them to franchises. So we can do that as well. Now, not everybody that has a business means it's franchisable, if you will. So we do take people through that same process and say, let's really understand, is this just another coffee shop or is there something compelling about their model that makes it franchisable?
Are there some questions, like early on questions people should ask themselves before they even consider taking that step?
The biggest thing is the model, does it have something unique? Is there a hook? Is there a USP or a unique selling proposition? Because if you're just another, you know, coffee shop, what's really compelling about that? Now, you know, we look and roll our eyes and we think about Starbucks, like, what was the big deal with that? But that's all about marketing more than anything. Let's be honest, it has nothing to do with the quality of their coffee because their coffee sucks. But people are certainly willing to spend $5 for a cup of coffee, right? So, again, it's not just one thing. It's never just one thing. You have to be able to connect all the dots and say, what are the chances? What's the likelihood of success? It's the same thing I say with candidates. They'll say, well, am I going to be successful with this, Patrick? I go, I have no idea. Only thing we can do is figure out a way to mitigate your risk. Connect all the dots, think about your strengths, look at the financial profile, and then you got to take a risk. The carpenter always says, measure twice, cut once.
Right. Well, I'm just going to one last time remind everybody, franinside.com/mastermind to connect with Patrick and his team. And before I let you go, Patrick, if you're ready, we'll jump into rapid fire questions.
Our way.
What lie do business owners tell themselves and others?
Yeah, I think the biggest lie is they're going to say it's going to get easier. It's going to get easier. It's going to get easier. And the fact of the matter is, I don't care if you're working in Motorola or you own 10 Jimmy John's, work is still a four-letter word, no matter how you do it. It's still going to be work.
Do you have a book recommendation, or what are you reading right now?
Well, my favorite book, and I tell everybody to read this, is a book by Joe Matthews. It's called Street Smart Franchising. And every candidate that I work with, I implore them to read this book. And everybody who reads it, their eyes are just aglow with so much information about franchising. The more people know about how franchising works, it'll help demystify it.
Is one tool you can't live without, whether it's in your personal or business life?
One tool, I mean, it's got to be the, you know, the iPhone. I was a BlackBerry guy for a long time, and I finally succumbed and have the iPhone. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's just, it's a must have.
If you could go back in time and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would that be?
Probably relax. Everything's going to be okay. I mean, it's in the here and now. You know, we're all anxious. Is this going to work out? Is this new job going to work out? Am I going to marry the right gal or guy? I mean, all those things. And what you begin to realize is that everything is going to be okay. I always tell my candidates when they join a franchise, I go, the sun's going to rise in the east tomorrow. I promise. Everything's going to be fine. You know, still going to be hard work, but it's going to be okay.
Do you happen to have a tip, trick, or strategy that everybody could implement in their business today to have a direct impact?
Well, I think the biggest thing is probably using LinkedIn or social media, not to watch cat videos and post goofy stuff, but think about it from a content standpoint. What you're sharing is, are you mindful of your audience? So many times I'll get these newsletters from like the Toyota dealership, and it's so centric to them. It's like, I don't care about the new Avalon. But if you tell me about, you know, 10 things I need to be aware of to get my car ready for winter, okay, now it's content that's relevant to me. So I think marketing, especially social media, has to be focused in on your core customer.
Well, Patrick, is there a question or concept you wished we would have covered here today?
Yeah, the only thing that I think that people don't realize when it comes to franchising, there are ways that you can be a franchise owner and be largely passive. There are some franchisors that are now offering these passive investor models where you know, just like if you owned 25 apartment units in Sanford, Florida, and you're up in Michigan, you have a property management company operate those for you. It's the same premise with this passive investor model.
Well, I really appreciate that. And if you want to learn about that strategy, I'm going to direct everybody to your website again. So it's franinside.com/mastermind. Really appreciate your time here, Patrick. This was a great conversation.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you.
If you learned at least one actionable step to incorporate into your real estate investing, if so, please consider returning some of that value by leaving a positive review, subscribing to our YouTube channel, or joining our growing network on Facebook and Twitter. You can find links to all of our social media accounts in the show notes. See you next time.